Okay, welcome everyone, participants here and also online. My name is Shirley Payne. I'm from the University of Virginia, and I'm going to introduce you to another Virginian in just a few minutes. But first, I want to remind everyone to complete your the session evaluations when it's over. You can do that by going to the session page and clicking there and completing it. The speaker today is the ISO at Virginia Tech. He is a very well-known and popular speaker, and also has been training for SANS for many years, traveling the world doing that. He is a colleague and a friend of mine and of many of you as well. So if you have not heard Randy speak, you're going to learn something today and you're going to enjoy doing it, I guarantee it. So here he is, Randy Smith. Randy's training. Don't know where the Smith came from. So sorry, Randy.
Thanks a lot, Carly. I mean, Shirley. It's good to be back, and it's good to see familiar faces. Today, people say, well, you're going to scare us? And I said, I hope not. You know, they say, well, we like your talks because you scare us. And I you like horror films. And we can show you all sorts of horror films. But today I want to talk a little bit about some strategy and the 20 critical controls in particular. Just very briefly, this is who I am. Somebody said, how long have you been working in security? And I said, since 1992. I was a sysadmin back then. I became a security expert because all of my servers got hacked all at once. And then over the course of a year, they got hacked repeatedly, in which case I became a better security expert as it came down the line. But been doing this a long time. Virginia Tech, with 35,000 plus node network, we're dual stack, IPv4, IPv6. We've been running a full production IPv6 network since 2005. So you come to our network, you get both there. My philosophy is kind of simple. It's all security is local. That means I want to empower the local IT staff. Because let's face it, I don't have a lot of people, and there are a lot of people in the university. The closer I can get training to the departmental IT staff and the people that actually use the computers, the better and the easier it is for me to come up with a reasonable plan that has some type of success. My other philosophy is that the business process will trump the security process, okay? I can't tell you how many times I run into IT admins who basically say, no, you can't do this because, and the reason is it's a technical reason. And what happens is the end users go, but I need to get to this site. No, you can't go to that site because I think it's dangerous for you. Well, it's the other way around. The business process needs to dictate to the security people what they need to do and what they don't need to do. Otherwise, you will turn these people into some of the best ways to test how to circumvent what you set up. You know, so you need to understand as an IT person the business process before you start imposing any type of security requirements, because you need to understand nowadays with the regulations and all this stuff, you need to understand what their constraints are. And so I personally believe that, you know, restrictive security policy practices cause worse problems because people will try and circumvent them. And I can't tell you how many times I go to the IT guy, and the IT guy says, oh, yeah, we're perfectly fine. And my sensors are saying, no, you guys are bringing in personal computers, your own laptops, installing your own software and going around it because the environment is too restrictive, and it gets in the way of the process. So our strategy at Virginia Tech, just like every single one of you here for the most part, we're basing it off of the ISO 27002 standards and NIST 853. But the real thing here is protect sensitive data regardless of location. It's funny to me when people come up in the commercial world and they say, oh, what are you going to do about BYOD? Whoa, BYOD, oh. And I laugh. I said, you know, everybody here in the edu world, we've been in a BYOD world we've been in it for 30 years. I don't know about you guys, but probably the same. The only thing that's changed is the size of the D. It used to be a desktop, then it was a laptop, then it's a smaller laptop, and now it's a smartphone. That's the only thing that's changed. Okay? People still could go outside of our network to gain data and all that. So frankly, if you don't worry about the device so much, but you say, You want to use a smartphone? Can you do encryption on a smartphone? Can you do wiping of the logs? Can you partition the smartphone? Yes? Have at it. No? Oops, get a better smartphone. Okay? Protect the data. I don't care where the data is stored, as long as it's protected. Again, the business process, trumps the security process if there is a conflict between the business and the security process. We've all been in that situation where a dean or department head says, I don't want to do a 15-character password. I want my password to be fluffy. Right? And 9 times out of 10, people change it to be that way. We've all been down that road. Okay? So I don't really care so much because we are open. I tell people, and again, we are corporate. Yes, we have a corporate data center. Everyone here has a corporate data center. Everyone here has the same type of corporate restrictions, physical access to the data center, firewalls, and all that type of stuff. We are that. We're also an ISP. In our case, we have 37,000 students that bring their own devices and they hook into our network. I think that makes us an ISP, just like with this, right? And so trying to balance those two paradigms is a real issue. So for me, I don't really care what comes in the net. I worry about what leaves the net, and that in terms of compromised machines. So 20 quick critical controls. It's quick wins. It focuses on the most common and damaging threats. It's a consistent implementation, and best yet, it gives you a way to collect some metrics to justify additional acquisitions. You can, you know, without metrics, I can't go to a CFO and say I need to do this because, you know, it sounds like a good idea. No, I have to go and say it will cost the university a couple $100,000 in fines if we don't do this solution. And to keep you from doing that, I can do it for fewer than a couple $100,000, either by buying software, hardware, or salaries for additional people. But I need metrics. I need to be able to show the metrics. And that's the one thing that, as I talk to some of my peers, we still are so far behind in the metric side of the house. We're not collecting the right metrics and posing those metrics to the correct people inside the university. Because what we're trying to do, we're trying to keep, obviously, attackers from getting in. But as we all know, nobody's going to be 100% effective on that. So the attacker, once they gets into a machine, they want to stay in the machine. So that gives us another way to try and defend against that. And then they want to cause damage, either by exfiltrating data from our network or just destroying machines. Hacker breaks into a machine, score, hacker 1, Randy 0. Randy interferes with the command and control communication going out of the net. Score is hacker 1, Randy 1, and tie goes to the defender. Okay? As long as I can keep data from leaving or any type of communication from leaving the net, okay, then now we just deal with cleaning up the machine. And 20 crits basically give us a way to approach that problem. Okay? This is one thing. As a CISO, we all know this, and you know we know what happens. Nobody listens to me, so why should we, right? Why the critical controls? There is, first off, it's a subset of the priority one controls in NIST 853. It is also mappable to 27002. There's a link here on the slide presentation, and I'll show you an example of it in a minute that has that mapping. So you can see which of the 27002 controls, the 20 critical controls, work with. It is technical only. It's not an operational control. And so from that, we have to start somewhere. There's a gazillion of these things, right? My favorite number is, I always like to say, a kabillion of them. There's a kabillion vulnerabilities and things that we have to do. Let's start with 20 and work on those. The NSA, again, the mitigation scores, stop the attacks early, stop a lot of attacks, and try and mitigate when you do get hit. Because my focus these days is assurance, not compliance. If you focus on assurance, you actually do compliance. Right? You're not a check item. Check, check, check. But did it really protect my system? No, it just checked off an item that's on a checklist. If you assure that it protects your network and your data, then that's much more valuable, and you can turn around and say, yes, we're in compliance. Okay. I'm going to talk just very briefly and just give you a quick headline of what the controls are. First control, inventory of unauthorized and authorized devices. Basically, what this means is that can you detect any device that's connected to your network within an X amount of time? Plug a machine into the network, does somewhere a network management device or some IDS or something go, ooh, there's a new IP address that just connected to my network. Okay? So, do you have some type of an up-to-date inventory? I'll show you some examples of what we have here later on. Unauthorized and authorized software. First off, can you tell if somebody installed software on the system? Yes and no. Depends on your environment. Okay, remember, these are controls. These are goals. Secure configurations for hardware and software and laptop servers. Do you have, especially start within your data center. Don't look at the whole university per se. Start within your data center. Does your systems team there have a checklist of how to configure particular servers? I suspect the answer is yes. Okay? In that sense, you have the ability to meet that control at the data center level. Do you have a minimum security level for any machine or any technology device that connects to your net? We do. We actually have a policy that says that I call it, you must be this tall to play on our network. Okay, there's seven things that have to be on there. One of the things is there has to be a person responsible for the device. Okay? And we've all been down that route and say, who owns that machine? You go, oh, I don't know. We've been there, but we have to do that. So, do you have that secure configuration list? Start small. Start within the data center, and then you can extend it out. Do you do, as in your security office, do you do vulnerability scans of every machine on your network, or better yet, the critical machines on your network to start off with? And so that's what we're talking about here with this continued vulnerability assessment and remediation. Malware defenses. What do you have to prevent or detect malware that's coming into your machine? Do you use devices like FireEyes or any other type of IDS that's out there for it? Application software security. This is my big boogaboo at the moment, is vendors write, from a security standpoint, crap for software. Can't tell you how many times we tested web apps, and they're vulnerable to a SQL injection. Put the old single quote in there, and then watch the thing go boom. And then they go, how did you do that? I'm curious, how many of you, do you have an app, when you buy software packages, do you have a questionnaire that you require the vendor to fill out? And in that questionnaire, do you say, is your application, if it's a web app, for instance, vulnerable to the top 10 vulnerabilities listed on the OWASP site? And you find that in the answers, you're sort of surprised because sometimes they go, what's OWASP, which right away you should ring. OWASP, for those of you that don't know, is the Open Web Application Security Project, OWASP, OWASP.org. They have a top 10 vulnerabilities list in there. It's a wonderful thing. List 10 vulnerabilities that do the most damage in web apps. Do you have that as part of your purchasing process? Wireless control. How do you connect to the wireless network? Data recovery. And my big thing is skills. A poorly trained sysadmin is a bigger threat to my network than any of the hackers outside of Virginia Tech. Okay? Try to get the training in there. Does your networking group have secure configuration rules for all the network devices that connect to the net? Do you have some sort of limitation and control of network ports? Now, a lot of schools, they will do this, try to do it globally for the entire school. Okay? Well, you could do it that way. I prefer to go, let's start with the critical machines and make sure that only the ports that need to be open are open on it. Okay? Controlled use of administrative privileges, boundary defense. Those of you that know me, I don't believe in border firewalls at the border. Okay? Because wireless changes the rules. I can bypass a border firewall by just opening up a little access point and everybody comes through me or whatever. Wireless changed the rules. What wireless did was, now, don't get me wrong, border in my world or my head is at the machine level. That's your last line of defense. Network-based, host-based firewalls. That, if you're wireless, that's your last line of defense. So to me, that's the border. But in your case, it can be anything. Do you have something to monitor the flow of traffic coming in and out of your nets? Can't tell you how many times that, you know, we look at this and go, do you have something like a SIM or a central syslog server to analyze the log? Anybody still use LogCheck? LogCheck is still one of my favorite tools of all time, you know. It's just a log. It scans your logs. It looks for keywords. When it finds a keyword in the log, it does something. Runs another program, sends an email, does a page. Do you have something like that? For the 15th control here, do you have the need-to-know stuff? What you should be thinking in your head right now is, well, these are some things that are really not our IT issues. These are business process issues. And that's exactly what we're trying to get you to think about. Account monitoring and control, right? How do you deprovision and provision accounts? What do you do if you lose data? How do you stop it? Incident response and network engineering, you know, that has to be validated manually. And then the last control, which I laugh about, I said, I don't have to contract a pen testing thing. I just got to leave my network open and see who comes in, because everybody wants to pen test an edu network. Okay, but we have that as the 20 controls. Now, those are the 20. Some of them I can see from the looks on your faces that you're thinking, I don't know about that one. Well, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get you to think about what the problems are. Okay? So from this type of stuff, in terms of how do we implement it, well, we went straight to the top. My CIO went to the president of the university and said, we need to do this. We need your backing. And they said, you got it. What do you need? As long as it's not money, staff, or personnel. Right? Well, you know, we have what I call control burns. You know, if you have an incident in the right part of the university, things happen. You know, and I call it control because you know that you guys have followed the rules and you're relatively safe. You guys have followed the rules and you're relatively safe. But that one critical area, they kind of like, well, I don't know why we have to do this. And so you know sooner or later something's going to happen. So you have your little fire trucks ready to come in. When the incident happens, you just come in, you clean up everything, and then they say, well, you guys are really good. We're not going to give you money because you cleaned up right away. No, they're embarrassed because then I go, well, let's see. The root causes were this, 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 and this, which was covered in this document here, which is covered in this policy here. Okay. The one people say, well, how do I do with faculty? You know, they're really just, you know, just fire back at us. Well, you know what? A lot of the guys that are the pain and faculty members, they don't like it when people know they did something wrong. They made a mistake. Because in their brains, these are straight A people, right? They've never made a mistake in their life. They don't know how to deal with mistakes. They certainly don't like it if you know that I made a mistake. And so you play on that. You go, hey, I'm really sorry, but you know, I'm going to have to report this, and it's an obvious error. Ooh, you know, you say that error word, then they're thinking, oh my God, I don't get a score of 100 anymore. I only have a 99. You know, I mean, it's something weird about that psychological thing there. So, do a gap analysis. I'll show you an example of this in just a minute. But the real trick in all of this is, in the security office, I don't have all the answers to all those controls. I have to go to the network management group. I have to go to individual departments, the bursar's office, HR. I have to go and see who has the data that I need for this. The provisioning of accounts, I go to the identity management group, the guys that manipulate our online identities. Then I say, can I get access to that data? Surprisingly, departments outside of IT were the most cooperative. Departments inside of IT were the most resistive. And a lot of times it's because they have inside of IT, they got, do you have a list of all the software on there? And you know that what the guy did was he wrote down on a piece of paper, handwritten thing, what the license keys were and all that, and then he stuffed it inside a drawer in his desk. And he does not want to come out when you're sitting there across the desk. And he does not want to reach under that drawer and pull out the piece of paper and show me that it's just a handwritten list. Okay? And I go, dude, I'm a sysadmin. I know how that works. I still have piles of software lists and hardware configurations and everything else. You know, no. It takes a lot of time. And so they try and now they have to take their chicken scratch that they handwrote and put it in a spreadsheet so that it looks official. Okay, a lot of times you get that type of resistance, but this is where being stubborn comes in. You just say, I need it. And then you come back the next day and you go, I need it. Then you come back the next day and you go, I need it. Okay? But this is the trick, is find out where that information for a particular control is. And don't do all 20 at the same time. Look at the 20, figure out which ones are the quick wins. Which ones do you have the most, the best chance of implementing first? And realize, I said it was a 3 to 5 year project. Now that we're in the first year of it, I'm thinking it's maybe a 5 to 7 year project. It's going to take time. And you keep telling people, this is going to take time. This is not a 1 year deal. Even in the institutions I know where everything is tightly controlled by the CIO or by one group, it still can't be done in a year. It just takes a lot of information there. So let me show you very quickly an example of a gap analysis matrix here. So this is one that was designed by a friend of mine. So basically what he's got here, it's a nice little spreadsheet. And you see over here, let me come up to critical control 1, for instance. So here, we talk about the QWs are quick wins. What are the quick wins of the particular control? Some sort of automated asset inventory discovery tool, build a preliminary asset inventory list of systems for the public and private networks, DHCP server logging, and equipment acquisition should update the inventory process. So these first two quick wins most likely come from your network management group. Our network management group is cost recovery. They don't open up a port unless you pay for it. And once it's paid, then they have diagnostic tools because now you've paid for the port. So if there's a problem with the port, they have to be able to identify who's on that particular machine, what switch controls that particular port, and so on and so forth. And so they usually have the tools to do that. In our case, we realized that it was one of these things where I walked up one day and I said, man, we have a geek night. We call it geek night. It's a Tuesday night thing at a local pub. The network admins, the sysadmins, and the security guys, we all get together, drink Guinness, throw darts, which, alcohol and sharp, pointy, flying objects, perfect match, right? But one day I came in and I said, I got this IP address. This machine is doing a DOS on us. It's inside my network, and I don't know where it is. And one of the network guys goes, well, what's the IP address? And I had it on a piece of paper, and he looks at it, and he gets on his little, mini notebook, and he does some magic. He comes back. He goes, it's in room 310 Daring Hall. And I'm like, how did you do this? I'm not worthy. And it turns out that they have a diagnostic tool. And so when he showed me the tool, I said, can we get access to this tool? Well, we had to go with my CIO. Well, at the time, Wayne Donald was the ISO, so I had to go to Wayne. Wayne had to go to the head of the networking group. They worked out that, yes, we could get access to the tool and stuff like that. Now we use the tool for incident response. They use it for diagnostics. We use it for incident response. So it's that type of push, give and take that you have to develop. DHCP server logging, your networking group has that. I don't. The systems people don't have that. So find who has it and then go from there. Asset inventory system. We all have to deal with our property management guys, right? They come in with the little barcode scanners, and where's this device? I don't know. That device has been gone for a decade, Don't you update your records? There are flaws in the system, boys and girls. We know that. But you have to make an effort to see what's out there. Property inventory might be a place to get this type of stuff. So this is just an example of what we got. Over in the far columns then, they call it a technical sensor, but that's really what we've got. And then what's your baseline? Okay. So what's your baseline? Do you have a hardware device inventory, your process control stuff for change control processes, and then you just kind of put a little percentage thing. Where are we? When we did the gap analysis this past summer, we're averaging somewhere between 30 and 50% on 7 out of the 20. Okay, we're probably in the 30s for another 3 out of the 20. So it's taking time to figure out where the stuff is. We're not perfect. Neither will you. You won't be perfect, but you got to start somewhere. What this, an unintended thing, although now that I think about it, it makes perfect sense. From the security office, if we go and undertake the effort to try and find where all this information is, all of a sudden now it becomes a lot easier for me to respond to attacks in a reactive mode, but more importantly, in a proactive mode. Because if I see a gap where we don't have that information, some unit in the university doesn't have good records on that, that's a problem, and we need to address it. So in a way, it kind of helps us go through this whole process here. And so we have this, again, just an example of this spreadsheet here. And then basically, we just kind of work our way down the controls. Okay, critical control number 2, software inventory system, application inventory. Those of you that are in Active Directory, you probably have a good idea of the software that's installed on your clients' machines. Those of you that aren't in a centralized, well, maybe there's a college or a department that runs their own version of an Active Directory. Somebody there has it. And then those of you that don't have domains or independent people that aren't in the domains, well, is there a software purchasing group that does site licenses for the university? Is there a computer purchasing group? Find where that information is stored. Develop application whitelisting technology. Come on, that's the goal. It may be a windmill to some of us. We are constantly trying to fight the windmill. It may be that, but at least we know. Knowing what we don't know is just as important as knowing what we do know. Okay? And so this is an example, again, just working our way down the path. Or as the guys in my office say, the path of destruction. So you already have the answers in the most case. For instance, for control number 1, check with your network managing group. Control number 2, look at, for instance, a software purchasing or a computer purchasing group. Configuration, probably policies, and I should have said they're standards. You probably have some sort of standards. I guarantee if you have a system group in the data center, they have nice standards, minimum system configurations for Oracle servers, for mail servers, for whatever, web servers, the whole nine yards. Those guys, they come in, they got it all cookie. They probably have pre-built images that they just, pop and load in there. Vulnerability scanning. In our case, we run weekly scans against the critical servers using commercial vulnerability scanners. Malware defense, we have, FireEye devices, among other, and we control those. Application software security, that purchasing security questionnaire that I mentioned, maybe something like that. Network management group for device. Network backup service or departmental backups for data recovery. Things like secure the human for skills training, secure configuration, network management group. So you can sort of see that these are some places you can start. Okay, ports. Well, I don't know. Does anybody have a university-wide, list of acceptable ports or anything like that? Okay, one to 65, 535, right? We don't have it at the university side, but there are some departments within the university that my nickname for them is East Germany, because these guys are so restrictive that it's amazing to me, what they don't let. There's one business unit that you're not allowed to do personal email except on your break time. Okay. And then at the other end of the thing, there's total chaos, but it balances out. So find out where these policies and guidelines are. Same thing with your boundary defense. Audit logs, whether you have a central for the entire university or departmental, some sort of a SIM, and it doesn't have to be a commercial SIM, it can be a homegrown, some sort of a syslog server or event log server. A lot of departments or colleges, they'll have a syslog server that takes Linux and Unix syslogs, and then they take Windows event logs, convert them to syslog format, and throw them in the syslog server, and then they have the lookup tools. Controlled need to know your identity management group. They're the ones that you can probably ask for that. Same thing with the monitoring and control. What's HR's policies when somebody leaves the university? How long does it take to deprovision their account, transfer ownership? Sensitive data protection. Everybody have a sensitive data protection policy? Yeah. And that one for us, we have six elements: social, credit card number, passport number, driver's license number, bank and debit account information. If you have a file or database that has any of those six elements, those elements have to be encrypted at rest, in transit. Okay? It's a pain, yeah.
Randy, are those mandated by the state?
Were these mandated by the state? No, in this case, it's university. Wide thing, but the state of Virginia does have a data breach notification series of laws that especially like medical records. I think if it's over 1,000, the attorney general's office has to be notified. So there's a little bit of that, but no. In this case, the standard is ours, and it's been both a boon and a bane, depending on who's on the other end of it. Incident response, of course, security office, network engineering, pen tested, those type of things. These are some places where you can go and start to look for the information that you have already. You might draw up something like a little, relationship diagram, an ERD. This is just an example. Here we have active scanners. These guys scan the networks to look for new IP addresses. You might have some sort of passive detection. Our networking group does have a passive detection thing. Every 2 to 5 minutes, they dump the CAN tables above every switch on campus, throw it in a big giant database in the sky so they know if something is hooked into the wired network. And then it goes into a big giant database here, and then from here, you can compare it against the property inventory control guys, stuff like that. You may have network access control of some sort of NAC, that type of stuff. So this part of the loop is what I call the detection loop, and this part of the loop is the alert loop. Oh, wait, this is an unauthorized device. Notify somebody. But again, you might just draw like a diagram like this to see what pieces you need. You're looking at this. I'm looking at some of your faces, and you're going, okay, that's the networking group. That's systems. We don't do that type of stuff. The alert stuff, we don't have staff to do. Okay, but you can see just from one picture, you're already thinking about where you might have that information. Draw it out and see what happens there. With the log database, you might have log analysis, log database systems, make sure everybody's time synced to a network time protocol, and throw it out there. So that's just another example of an ERD diagram. This is some of the stuff that we did at our site. This is all homegrown stuff. Then we do use a blend. My philosophy is get a freeware tool, get a commercial tool that does the same thing, because both of them tell little lies. It's just a question of finding out how big the lie is. Okay. So in this case, we have the usual wikis, stuff like that. We use rack tables for internal stuff. We have these as IDSs and this type of stuff. We have, lookup tools. Most of these lookup tools here came from the networking group that they gave us access to. And then we have scanning tools and things like that. One of the most interesting things that turned out to be the simplest was I had a board member a couple years ago. He asked me, how many printers do we have on campus? Now, when you're standing up in front of the board and they ask you a question that seems relatively simple, and your brain's going, I have no clue of what's there. And you have to say, I don't know. And you know what the next question is. Why not? I said, well, that's not just something that we count. Well, do you think it's a good idea? Which you all know means, by the next meeting, we better know, right? So we just wrote a simple NMAP script that every day goes out and counts the number of servers. This is the number of servers that we had a couple days ago on that. Am I giving away the tool? No, you guys can scan our campus. You could probably get the same thing. I could scan your campus and get the same numbers. Okay? But the real shock for him was, why do you have 2,961 web servers on campus?
Because everyone has one under their desk.
Well, even better. It turns out that over three quarters of them are printers, copiers, scanners. They are door access control devices. They're card swipe readers. They are vending machines that have their own little built-in scanners on them. All sorts of stuff. Laboratory data acquisition equipment. We found electronic microscopes, gas flow generators, analyzers, the whole nine yards, a lot of laboratory equipment out there. But here's the value of it. Of all of these things, we probably have about maybe 200 database servers out of 35,000, and I know the IP addresses of them, so that means, let's do the scanning on just the database servers for now. Okay? I know where they are. And remember I said local views. So what we want to provide to College of Engineering, for instance, is this exact same thing, but instead of the entire Class Bs, both Class Bs that we have that shows up here, you only see the subnets that are, belong to the College of Engineering. So you may have 300. And then in the Department of Physics, give you a physics view. So you only see the things in physics. And that, all of a sudden, now all of a sudden they're going, I have 20 web servers, and then tomorrow, you look at it and you go, there's 25 web servers. Where did they come from? Right? Now you know that there's five extra web servers that popped up from yesterday. Remember control number one? Find new machines that come in. Well, who found them? The local guy finds them. Okay, so this concept of local views is really turning out to be a critical thing for implementing a university-wide control. I see 2,961 web servers. If there was 2,975 web servers, I don't know if they're legitimate, me being at the security office. But if you were at your department and you saw five extra ones pop up, you might want to go, where did they come from? So the local view thing really helps out there. So this is just an example. This is just a simple NMAP script that we run through the entire university. And with some simple plots, you can sort of see some trending previous week, previous month, that type of stuff, just to see how it goes. And hopefully it's interesting because sometimes we see the number of web servers drops dramatically during breaks and then pops back up. So, that type of stuff. It's always good to do that. So, what are the challenges? Well, first off, you need to get up your upper management support. Plain and simple. If you don't have that, you're not going to succeed. Getting the data. The internal IT groups may not have the information in a format you want. They may not want to give you the data. And this is the trust model. I've talked about this a long time here at EDUCAUSE. If my departments don't trust my office, then we're doomed. Okay? And I tell the guys, I said, look, what do you need? Do you need like an extra IT guy? Well, maybe if I can show that you're getting hammered a lot and it's eaten up a lot of your present staff time, maybe you can use that metric, remember metric, to go to your department head and say, hey, I need someone else. If they only give you half a position, well, half is better than none. And now all of a sudden they see that, hey, I can use data that the security office is collecting to help me get more resources. Okay, the gap analysis. Find out what you have, what you don't have, and then pick a couple of the controls and just say, okay, let's just implement it. And it really comes down to doing it. When I talk to some of my peers, this is a lot of work. This is a lot of work. I said, look, just do it. Okay, I teach a lot of music at music festivals and stuff like that, and I had advanced classes and. You see a student who's ready to hit the note, and they're hovering over the note because they don't want it to be the wrong note. I said, well, first off, my motto is dare to suck. Okay, you got it, and then you just kind of want to go, and it hits the right note, and they're fine. But they're paralyzed. They don't want to make that mistake. You're gonna make mistakes. The key is how fast can you recover from the mistakes. Okay, do it. I've done a talk. One of the most popular series of talks that I've done this past year have been the more changes, the more it stays the same. Over the last 20 years, when I met Marcus back in the 80s, it was really kind of fun. We talked about stuff, and then 20 years later, we find out that nothing's really changed. The same root causes that caused hacks back in the 80s and 90s are still causing hacks in the 2010s. What have we been doing? I put in a blog. This one, I got a bunch of people mad at me because I said, we have created a cybersecurity industrial complex. There is no economic incentive to get rid of the root causes because if we did, all these security companies would be out of business. Okay? The zero-day thing now, that's really got me freaked out because now we got people that are selling 0 days and they don't want to give out the 0 days, right? Well, what does that do to the rest of us? Great. Well, now, thank you very much for telling me that somebody out there has a way to get to every computer system that I own, and I can't do anything about it because I don't know what to defend against. Okay? It's an issue. So we go from there. And it's time to change. It's time to step out of this I can't do it model because it takes too much time or too much money. Well, you know what? Take one thing and do it. And what you find is that all of a sudden, when you get that one thing done, then people start coming to you and they say, hey, I got a tool that can do this. And you have no idea where that came from. You go, hey, thanks a lot. You know, and then someone else comes in, I got another tool that can do this. And after a while, you build up this web of trust and go from there. Because really and truly, I'm convinced that in the past 20 years, we have not, as security professionals, done anything different. This is what, our 11th year at security professionals, we still are talking about the same problems we talked about 11 years ago. You know, it can't be the vendor's fault for all of these things. It can't be our student or faculty's fault for all of these things. It's time for us to do something and make sure that we do something about it, okay? So, you know, one step at a time. Just go from there. I'll leave it open to any questions. And I can show you some other stuff. Let me just very quickly, if you want to see where some of the threats are coming from while people are thinking about questions, if you do have questions here in the room, please go to the microphones so that the web audience guys can hear what the question is. If you don't have any questions, I'll be around for a few minutes. This is just an example of where we're taking IDS data and merging it with GIS data. So remember we talked about locations. I can, from the networking group, I know where, what building and what room these guys are located in, and we can go from there. The yellow lines kind of tell us where we think the attacks are coming from. And a board member asked me one time, where are they coming from? I said, well, I don't know. Let's find out where they're coming from. So we can pull it back and give a visual representation of where it is. Yeah, St. Louis is one of the big attack points. But, you know, here we see some stuff from Europe, and we see the usual couple. Actually, it's kind of quiet today. None from China. That's unusual. Makes me think our sensors aren't working. But anyway. You know, and then down the line, we can go and check on some stuff. So there are ways to do it. Is this something fancy? No, this isn't anything fancy. This is taking a network tool, taking the data, merging it with GIS data that we get from our building's physical plant people. Your physical plant people have a ton of information about the buildings. You know, and so you can map it and do it that way. Any questions? Everybody stunned? Please.
Hi. You talk about local view and sharing some of that information with your local administrators.
Yes.
How do you accomplish that and give them what they need to do what they need to do?
So first off, our network management group has those address allocations divvied up. So mechanical engineering has this address range, and so on and so forth. So we get that information from them. And then and this is where the challenge comes with commercial products, especially with SIMs, is can you do a localized view? And then what format do you have to specify the address range for limits? So in the NetScan thing, we know that mechanical engineering is the 128.173.55 subnet. So we just give them what they can see in that 128.173.55 subnet.
Through a web portal interface?
Yeah, through a web portal interface. Yeah, and you can do that. You know, we did it homegrown, but you can, if you have a commercial SIM that can do views like that, that saves you a lot of. Then you can add all the other information that the SIM collects and give them the local view as well. Okay. One more. Okay.
I know you mentioned, you know, it's in the ideal way, it might take a couple of years in order to go fully through the 20 security controls.
Right.
How are you managing during that time frame, making sure that maybe the first control that you went and analyzed and implemented, stays the way it should, basically continuing making sure that that assurance stays throughout that entire life cycle? You're talking about just doing it, but I think, well, I want to do it, but I want to make sure that I keep doing it right through the length of the program.
Right, and you just kind of said it, just do it and keep doing it. I mean, you have to kind of review it every now and then. A lot of times for some of the controls, like the asset inventory stuff, the network stuff, that's fairly static, and it changes, you know, on a budget cycle in our case, you know, at the start of a fiscal year. For the software one, every semester, every quarter, whatever your academic thing is, calendar, how it's divided, maybe you go back and you check with the asset inventory stuff. We're not at that point yet. We're still just trying to get a couple of the controls, and we're still new in the cycle that we don't, you know, we haven't come back. But I would suspect that at least once a year we'll review all the other controls to make sure that we've got the feeds there. Yes.
If a large part of your implementation is not automation, it won't stay.
Right. So his comment was that if this isn't automated, then it's not going to stay up to date. And that's one of the big things about the controls is these are things that you can automate, either internally or with a commercial product. I think we're out of time. Is that right? Thanks a lot, guys.